Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay and had a good weekend. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on Monday, January the 15th. And our top story today is that a charity in Dover is calling for a fresh approach to stop the boats following the deaths of five asylum seekers in the Channel. 32 others were rescued after a vessel got into difficulty near a beach in northern France in the early hours of yesterday. 124 refugees arrived in Kent on Saturday after 26 days without any crossings. Well, Lucy spoke to Kay Marsh from Samfire shortly after the tragedy on Sunday.
It's devastating. We've just had 26 days, I believe, over Christmas where there were no recorded small boat crossings. That ended yesterday morning. I believe a boat reached Dover yesterday morning on Saturday. Obviously, this first thing Sunday morning has now happened. It's just awful. You know, there was not even any Coast Guard involvement because it happened so close to the beach. And it just goes to show when it's so cold and just so dark in a place like that, even before you've even left, it's dangerous. You know, you don't have to be in the middle of the channel for it to be a risk to life.
It has been so cold these last few days and nights, hasn't it? I mean, what must it have been like for those people who were on that boat?
It's terrifying to even think about it. You know, being in the dark and the cold anyway is just frightening in such a situation. But that water would have been absolutely freezing. Like, I can't even imagine how cold it was. As you know, the temperature in Dover at least has dropped in the last week or two. So I assume the same happened in Calais. Yeah, it's really scary.
And as you said, we had a period where we had no crossings for quite a while. Why do you think they've suddenly started again?
Yes, so 26 days over Christmas. It's quite a long time, really. And I guess, you know, I was checking every day to make sure still no boat crossings. And it was nice to see that nobody was crossing and obviously risking their life. I wish more had been done during that time. You know, I think it had everything to do with the weather. You know, the conditions have been awful over Christmas. We've been battling major storms, cold weather that just keeps getting colder. We've had snow. And I think it was all down to the weather why we saw the boat stop.
Of course, the government are pushing their Rwanda asylum bill, which is going to be back in the Commons this coming week. Do you think that's the solution to this?
Absolutely not. The Rwanda scheme will not solve this problem. It will exacerbate this problem. It will put traumatised, vulnerable people in just a horrific situation. The facility itself is small. They're touting it as a solution to everything, and it just isn't. And they, you know, there's no proof that it's going to solve anything. I don't think that has any bearing on why the boat stopped briefly. I'm unsure actually how much information makes it to northern France and how much people actually know before they get in that boat to come over, what to expect when they get here. But we're at the beginning of a year. It's a fresh start. You know, it needs to be the catalyst for change. This loss of life so early on in the year needs to be the turning point. And this is a humanitarian issue. We need to see these as human beings. We need a compassionate solution. We need safe and legal routes to asylum in the UK. We need to take away that need for anybody to get in that small boat or even think about taking such dangerous routes here.
And the Home Office has provided this statement.
These deaths are devastating and our thoughts are with the victims' families and friends. This is another reminder of the extreme dangers of crossing the Channel in these unseaworthy vessels and how vital it is that we stop the boats and prevent people from making these perilous journeys.
It comes ahead of the government's controversial Rwanda scheme returning to the Commons from tomorrow.
Kent Online News.
Now, this is one of our most read stories on the website today. A man's been winched to safety during a huge emergency operation at Herne Bay Seafront. If you head to the website today, you can see pictures and video from the scene. Police, paramedics, firefighters and the Coast Guard were called to Central Parade following reports of someone in difficulty in the water yesterday evening. The man has now been passed into the care of health professionals. A Ramsgate man has avoided prison after admitting stalking and emotionally blackmailing his ex-girlfriend. Edward Elliott hinted at taking his own life in text messages and emails and bombarded his victim with unwanted gifts and even turned up at her house. The 26-year-old who lives in Brindlegrove has been given a 12-month suspended sentence and made subject to a 6-year restraining order. It's thought a car fire on farmland in Margate was started deliberately Crews were called to Broadley Road on Friday night and spent an hour putting out the flames. No one was hurt and police are now investigating. Meantime, five fire engines have been sent to tackle a house fire near Hythe. The detached property on Sandling Road in Saltwood caught alight yesterday afternoon. 25 firefighters were needed to tackle the flames. Thankfully, no one was hurt. A report found not enough progress has been made in some areas to improve a Kent prison. Inspectors visited HMP Maidstone for a review after initially raising concerns in 2022. Some issues have been addressed, but there's still a lack of programmes to address offending behaviour and problems with the access and quality of education. Next today, and a Kent toddler who underwent a life-saving liver transplant is celebrating her second birthday. Gracie Harwood from Stroud was diagnosed with a rare liver disease at just 8 weeks old and was given only 2 years to live without a transplant. Well, luckily, her mum, Ray, was found to be a match and donated 20% of her liver. She's been speaking to reporter Keely Greenwood.
They took 20% of my liver and that was transplanted into Gracie, and that will just grow with her. So that will just grow with her and just act like a normal full-size liver. And the piece that they took from me grew back in 7 weeks.
Wow. I
know, it's incredible. And so they told me when I had the ultrasound, like after, I think it was like a 6 week check, they said, yeah, it's a different shape, but you're back to full capacity. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So it's quite
back.
Lovely to think there's a bit of you inside Gracie.
Yeah. Yeah, aww. Always. I'll always be with her no matter
yeah.
what.
Oh, that's cute.
So yeah, she's she recovered very, very well from her transplant. And I think a lot of that, they say that where there's if you've got a DNA match with the transplant, it makes the chance of rejection a lot less.
Oh yeah.
So that helped with that, because there's always a chance of rejection as well, even from sort of family donors, there's still a chance of rejection. And yeah, she didn't have any of that. She made a very, very good recovery. She was ready for discharge after like 13 days, which is like really, really like a really short amount of time for transplant babies. We were told to expect like 4 to 6 weeks.
Oh, right. Wow.
But she just completely smashed it.
Aww.
Yeah, she had a small setback. We got home the night that we got home, she developed a temperature. And we ended up going back into Medway and she was septic. That was really, really scary, because that's probably the most scared I've been through all of this, because it's very it can go really quickly, septic,
yeah.
can't it? So
yeah.
She was taken from Medway back up to King's and then sort of after a few days back home again. So it was another sort of little bump to get over, but she smashed it as per usual. Yeah.
So how old is she now?
She's nearly two. So she'll be two on the 25th of January. So she's just nearly two.
Oh,
and she's like a normal 2 year old now.
Yeah.
Yeah, she is. You wouldn't know by looking at her that she's been through all of this. She's back to sort of like a normal size now. She's sometimes naughty, sometimes she's chatting, she's jumping around, she's climbing the furniture, she's doing everything that you would expect a two-year-old to do. She's got a huge scar across her tummy, but you don't really see that, and it wouldn't matter if anybody did see it anyway. She still takes a lot of medication,
right.
And she's got some lifelong meds, because she'll always have the anti-rejection medication.
Right.
And some of the side effects of that mean that so she has to take other stuff just to keep her ticking over. But otherwise, you really wouldn't know what she's been through. And
aww.
She's such a happy baby. The whole way through all of this, even from the very beginning, all the doctors, they would always say she's the happiest baby on the ward. Like, even at her poorliest, she was still smiling. She's just a really happy kid.
Kent Online reports.
People living in a village near Dover are so fed up with the state of the roads, they've set up a pressure group. West Hotham only has a population of around 600 people, but the roads have an estimated 90 potholes. That's one for every sixth person. Well, Steve Oxenham has started a pressure group and is demanding action.
The state of the roads are appalling. There are four ways into the village. and they're all blocked for one reason or another. The matters have been reported to the Highways Agency and absolutely nothing has been done.
Roughly how many potholes do you think are on your roads?
I'm guessing, but I know of at least 78.
Yeah.
So I would have thought 80, 90.
Yeah.
This is a very small village. I mean, we only have 240 houses and a population of less than 600. So it's a very high figure.
Mm. And what do you think KCC needs to do? Obviously, they've been out occasionally and done sort of temporary fixes, but they very quickly wear away. What needs to be done?
They need to stop sitting on their hands, get out of their ivory towers and see firsthand what we have to put up with on a daily basis. We get the same platitudes time and time again, that there's no money. And we understand all that. Well, go and find the money. Out of all the issues in Kent, the roads is the biggest one. So divert your financial resources onto that at the expense of whatever. And if you haven't got the money, go and whinge to central government like we're whinging to you.
At the minute, there's sort of only one route into the village out of four that's sort of semi-safe.
Semi-passable. It would certainly be dangerous to anyone that didn't know the pits and falls of that particular road. That there's one particular pothole that's over 2 feet deep. It's been reported to KCC. They've done nothing about it. I personally, as a parishioner of this village, went along with a cone and placed it in there. And it was so bad, you could only see the top 10 inches of the cone. It's disgusting. We've had enough.
Steve was speaking to reporter Chantelle Weller as we mark National Pothole Day, where the County Council say critical safety defects have been repaired in the area, with planned drainage works expected for next month. CCTV cameras on an historic building in Kent will have to be painted after they were installed without permission. The security cameras on the Grade 2 listed Folkestone Library need to be the colour of bricks after complaints from heritage campaigners. The County Council were also forced to submit retrospective planning permission. There are calls for two so-called ghost roads in Ashford to be open to traffic to ease congestion in the town. Rutledge Avenue and Avocet Way were built in 2017 and connect two new housing estates, but have never been opened to cars or buses. Now, developers say they'll continue to maintain the roads until they're adopted by the council. It's not known yet when that will happen.
Kent Online reports.
People in a village in North Kent are celebrating news a house won't be built on the car park of their local pub. Residents have campaigned against the four-bedroom property on land behind the Sir John Falstaff in Higham. They've now been told the application has been rejected after council bosses received 75 objection letters and just two in support. Meantime, a Kent housing expert has been giving the Kent Online podcast some insights on how the property market will look throughout 2024. High inflation and interest rates may have put people off buying a home over the last couple of years, but Margate and Ramsgate have been named amongst the areas most likely to see a rise in property prices this year. Alex has been speaking to Sam Dalton from Ward's Estate Agents.
There's been some stabilising with some of the pricing, so I think that's positive. The marketplace I particularly cover is more affordable, so we attract a lot of Londoners coming down. There's a lot of suburbs, villagey type areas, so it's good for those wanting to work from home. I think it's looking really positive. Stabilising interest rates has helped, and there's a good variety of property types and styles that will suit most people.
Which kind of group of people do you think the market will suit more, buyers or sellers?
I think it's actually going to be both now. With the stabilising of the prices, I think that will encourage sellers more because properties won't be selling as fast. So that gives them a little bit more time to get their homes ready for the market and gives them an opportunity to not panic buy, but still enough time to choose the best buyer at the best price for their home. That's also going to suit them and their timescale.
And in the main, what are people looking for? I mean, are you having a lot of people show interest from London? Are they still wanting to come to Kent to, you know, get a garden and kind of get out of the city?
Very much so. Working from home space is important for a number of people still. Gardens are very popular, and parking, particularly they're still going to be commuting to work in London. And I think just a better quality of life, more greenery, easier activities for families. And there's plenty of really good things like that around the Kent area.
What kind of areas around Kent do you think are going to prove to be the most popular?
Definitely seen some popularity, I would say, in our Dartford, Gravesend, Strood, and even Rochester. So you've got the shopping centre, not far from, not just on the outskirts of Raynham. You've got Blue Water. You're still close to the coast, close to London, train stations. So access to London is good. Motorway networks are good. There's a good range of property types, and I think that's what attracts people. Modern, older style, all different age ranges. So I think that's where there tends to be a lot of movement within those towns as well as people coming down from London.
What about house prices? What do you expect to see there across Kent?
I think they will stabilise. And I think there could be some growth around the sort of maybe 300 to 400 price bracket, because that's still quite popular. So there's still some first-time buyers that are wanting to get those two-stroke, three-bedroom properties. But that's also a kind of good price-wise area for people looking to downsize, but also families looking to move up. So if they're currently in an apartment or a flat or a small one or two bedroom, I suspect that's probably where that will be still a very popular price brand.
Staying with property news, and a seafront house in Whitstable has been labelled Kent's most expensive two-bedroom terrace on the market. The property in West Beach is up for sale for a whopping £900,000. That's more than six times the price of the county's cheapest two-bed terrace. The agent says it's all about location. Plans to designate a popular country park in Deal as a nature reserve have been ruled out. Deal Town Council were chasing the status for Bettshanger Country Park to protect it from development. Dover District Council have refused, though, claiming the strategy is unworkable. There are currently two pending applications for the site.
Kent Online News.
Now, I'm sure you've noticed it has been incredibly cold, and gritters have been out overnight as an Arctic blast hits Kent. Temperatures are going to continue to struggle to get much above freezing over the next few days, and an amber cold health alert is in force across the county until Friday. That means we're being urged to check on those who are particularly vulnerable. Marco Patania is from the Met Office.
We've got high pressure sitting out towards the west of the UK, low pressure towards the east, and that's generating a very cold northerly flow. Of course, it's been very mild for much of the winter, but now, yeah, we are in the grip of a bit of an Arctic maritime and northerly airflow, and that will bring wintry conditions to many parts.
Parents have criticised a decision to change the name of a school in North Kent. Hartley Primary Academy in Longfield near Gravesend is going to be called Lee Academy Hartley in future. The school was built back in the 1800s. We're told the decision to alter what it's called was unanimous and included governors and leadership teams. Five Kent projects have been given a total of more than £45,000 by Active Thames to help more people enjoy the river. A Sea Scout group in Dartford is among those to benefit from the funding and will use the money to help buy two new catamarans. London Youth Rowing have also been given cash to roll out a new programme in Kent schools. If you follow us on socials, you can see what a sunken cafe and bar near Rochester Castle could look like. Plans have been put in for land behind the former NatWest in the High Street, which is near to where the original medieval gatehouse would have been. The idea is to upgrade the former bank too. And finally, an historic building in Tunbridge is set to reopen as a cafe and bar 100 years after it was turned into a bank. The Market House on the High Street used to be a grocery shop before being taken over by NatWest. The branch closed in March last year, and it's hoped it'll reopen in the summer.
Kent Online Sports.
Football, and Gillingham are up to eighth in League Two following a win on the road at the weekend. For the first time this season, they came from behind to get a victory, beating Accrington Stanley 2-1. It's also their third league win in a row. Well, here's a reaction from a very pleased head coach, Stephen Clements.
Delighted with the lads. I thought the first half we were marginally the better team. I thought it was a very tight game. But obviously to lose a goal straight after half time, we was disappointed. But I still believe the boys could come back into it. And obviously it's something we haven't done this season though, but to come back and equalise, obviously Ollie Hawkins does great from the corner, and Connor finishes off the set play at the back stick. And then obviously it's nice that we make some substitutions and they come on and really help the team. And that's why you have a squad. We've got a good squad, we've got a strong squad. And the lads that started the game today done really, really well. But the ones that have come on and made a difference and helped us out at the end. So I'm delighted with them all. And I think it's the first time we've scored two goals away from home this season. It's the first time we've come from behind. We've got quite a few monkeys off our back there. So it can only give us confidence going forward.
And 299 Jules fans made the trip. They were really fantastic there in the corner.
They were. I met a few on the way, and there was a few here early, and I went and they were telling me they were leaving really early this morning, sort of 6 o'clock in the morning they set off, and So it's a great effort from them. We really appreciate their support, and I know the players do too. And it's great when you can come away from home. There's no better feeling for a player where you come away from home and you go and celebrate with your away supporters at the end of the game. So I know the boys are thrilled that they're all here. And as I say, thanks for their efforts.
That's three league wins on the bounce now, which is great, and a home game next week rather against Forest Green.
Yeah, obviously it'll be another tough game, but it's obviously nice to put a little run together. The challenge is to have a better second half of the season than we've had in the first, so that's the challenge that's been laid down, and let's see if we can do it. We've made a good start.
Conor Masterson got the equaliser and also spoke to us after the game.
Yeah, I thought we battled really hard today. I thought Accrington, good side, moved the ball well, and you always have to work hard against them, and I think we did, and it was just great to get that goal.
It's been a while since Gillingham came from behind to win a game. How pleased are you as a collective that you've done it today?
Yeah, I think that was massive for the group. You know, we've been working hard the last few weeks, and I think everybody can see it's really starting to click now, and the camaraderie in the group, and we're all just buzzing, like we said. And I think because of the camaraderie, we're a tight-knit group now, and that's shown on the pitch today.
Someone just said, nice goal, Con. It was a nice goal. Just talk us through it.
Well, I have to say, Ollie Hawkins did really well. I have to say, thanks, Ollie Hawks. He headed it back across the goal, and I was just in the right spot again and nodded at home, so I'm happy.
That seemed to give us the momentum, and then the substitutions worked as well. Jaden Clark offering that pace on the right-hand side, McCauley Bond, that physicality up top, and great to see him get the goal.
Yeah, I thought, you know, Macker, I've obviously played with Macker at other clubs as well. I know what he's like. He's a handful, and he's a good guy as well, and I'm delighted for him to score. And I thought Lapu came on, did brilliant, and I thought Max Clark at the end winning headers and stuff. It was a real squad performance today, squad win today, and it's always nice, that is.
And three league wins in a row, that's really encouraging for the second half of the campaign.
Yeah, it's great. We just have to keep the momentum going. Like we were speaking in the change room now, we have a big game at home, Forest Green and MK Dons away, and their games we really think we can win, so we just have to keep going.
The manager was at pains to mention the set pieces and the work that the coaching staff do, people like Darren.
Yeah.
Great when it pays off for them, isn't it?
Yeah, it's brilliant because we do work on them a lot, and at work today, so we're all buzzing, and Darren's buzzing in there. He's having a little handshake to everybody, so he's very happy. Yeah, it's always, we haven't scored, I don't think, a set piece in a while, so actually my last goal was a set piece, so it's been a few games, so yeah, it's great for all of us.
On to ice hockey now, and Kent's Invicta Dynamos have lost to Streatham in the South Division 1. They were beaten 8-3 at the ice rink in Gillingham last night. Saturday's Southern Cup game between the two sides had to be called off after a fight broke out during the match. And in tennis, Kent's Emma Raducanu says she's hoping to build some consistency ahead of her first round match at the Australian Open. She's taking on America's Shelby Rogers early tomorrow. The 21-year-old from Orpington is coming back from 8 months out following surgery for wrist and ankle injuries. But that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, you just need to head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.